Growing up, I was always on a different diet. And I remember in my teens and my, it was, I think it was my late teens, early 20s, and I decided to go on Weight Watchers because I wanted to lose weight. And I lost 20 pounds and I weighed everything and I was obsessed with food. Even I remember even being in CEGEP. I grew up in Montreal, which is in between high school and university. And so it would be considered grade 12, grade 13. And I remember thinking to myself, what I would make for lunch. I would need to make something that was low calorie or that didn't have too much fat in it, or because I was trying to watch my weight. So it goes back to so long ago. Like, literally, if I think about it, it's been decades and decades and decades of me wanting to lose weight. And then I decided to go back to school. And when I went back to school and learned about nutrition, that's when it all changed for me. And today's conversation, I'm speaking to Dr. Michelle May, and we're talking about mindful eating. And it's a great episode, so I'm excited for you to hear it. But before I introduce Michelle, I wanted to just talk a little bit about my research. So I'm hoping that you've taken some time to fill out our surveys. Right now we have 10 surveys on our website, and our newest one is called Doctor Visit. So if you haven't filled out any of our surveys, we put a link to them below. Please do. Your responses, your stories are so important. And I'm constantly sharing the results of these surveys because we are in the midst of doing something pretty incredible. And by having you help us fill out the surveys, you are helping to further menopause research. So I'd be very grateful if you can take a moment, fill out our doctor's visit survey. We have over 500 responses at the moment. So I want to get to 1,000 because once we get to 1,000, we will publish a white paper on it. So I'd be grateful if you could take a moment, please, to fill it out. So I'm Andrea Donsky. Let's get into the podcast. I'm a nutritionist in menopause. I am a menopause educator and menopause researcher. And I'm also the co-founder of WeAreMorphous.com, a company that helps to educate and empower you to take control of your health and symptoms in perimenopause and menopause. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Michelle May. She's a former family physician and recovered yo-yo dieter. She's the founder of Am I Hungry? Mindful eating programs and training at amihungry.com. To date, she's trained over 800 wellness professionals, and she's the award-winning author of the Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat book series that teaches mindful eating to help people resolve mindless and emotional eating and senseless yo-yo dieting. She's also an associate professor at Arizona State University. Now, here's Michelle. Welcome to Menopause Reimagined, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Andrea.
I'm looking forward to this conversation because as Gen Xers, we grew up in an era of weight loss and calorie counting and measuring and weighing. I mean, I remember back when I tried to lose my, I'm going back to like my first dieting experience. And I remember I went on Weight Watchers and I would measure every little thing and I wouldn't put anything into my mouth unless it was on the scale or in that measuring cup. And, things have changed, since then. And now I'm much more about looking at ingredients and understanding what we're putting in and on our bodies. And when I came across the work that you're doing, you talk a lot about, mindful eating. And I'd love you to explain what that means.
Well, we share that experience. I also started Weight Watchers at a fairly young age, and many of the people I work with have that experience of having tried one diet after the other for their whole adult lives and never really getting to a place where they're at peace with food. I fortunately discovered the process of mindful eating along the way, and that has made all the difference. So I think a simple definition of mindful eating is eating with intention and attention. In other words, eating with purpose and awareness. And with purpose and awareness, you may have different goals for yourself. You may have, for example, you're a person who pays attention to the ingredients. Maybe another person is training for a 5K, another person is managing a medical condition, and so forth. So we may have different goals as we're managing our eating, but the point of mindful eating, at least the way that I teach it, is that it's an inside-out process. So rather than some expert outside of us telling us what we should and shouldn't eat, or when we should eat, or how much, and then leading to weighing, measuring, counting, logging, and basically what turns out to be obsession with eating or not eating. It's really about beginning to become reconnected with our bodies, internal cues of hunger and satiety and enjoyment and satisfaction. And at the same time, learning to understand the other reasons that we want to eat that have nothing to do with our body's needs.
Would you say mindful eating is similar to intuitive eating?
Yeah, I think I would say that it is very similar. They're not the same. I wasn't aware of intuitive eating when I developed this process. But I think nowadays we're seeing a lot of interest in what I would call a non-diet or an anti-diet approach. And mindful eating, at least the way I teach it, and intuitive eating fall under that umbrella of the anti-diet approach.
So the way I think about it, and I want you obviously to share some strategies and how to do it. But when I think of any, like I talk a lot about mindfulness in my work that I do, and being mindful of whether it's eating or whatever it is that's going on in your life. So would you say that the premise for mindful eating would also be a huge part of it would be looking at our emotions, like what's that whole emotional part of why we're eating?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's often the missing piece. Most of the time, when people do a plan or a program or a diet, oftentimes the focus is on what they're eating, how much they're eating, perhaps how much they're exercising. And for many people, at least the people I work with, they know a lot of that information because they've
Right.
dieted for so many years. What's missing is why are you eating in the first place? And so a mindfulness, as you said, is awareness. Well, it's really awareness of the present moment. And in the present moment, there's situational factors, there's thoughts, there's feelings, there's physical sensations. And so teaching people mindfulness techniques to get in touch with what's happening and what's influencing their decisions helps put them in charge of making more conscious decisions.
I remember, I mean, how many times did we, something happened, our mood was off, and then we would go to the freezer, grab a tub of ice cream, and literally just eat out of that tub of ice cream mindlessly, right? And what's interesting is last week there was a stressor. There was a stressor that was going on, and I noticed myself, I started eating a lot and couldn't satiate myself. I couldn't get enough food. And then I stopped myself and I'm like, I'm eating mindlessly, and I knew why I was doing it. And these are old programs, right? Like I haven't done that. I can't even tell you in how many years, but something triggered me. There's an emotional trigger, and I went right back to my old programs. But I was able now to be like, ah, I understand what's happening. I'm understanding what is doing it, and I was able to stop myself. So it's really incredible. I mean, like I said, being that Gen X generation, it's like we're the expert dieters, really, if you think of
Right.
all the generations, right?
Right. That is a really good example of what I'm talking about. So in diets, people attempt to control themselves, attempt to not eat the ice cream, and then when a trigger becomes overwhelming and they find themselves doing it, they are, as you said, mindless, and so they continue to do it. Then they feel guilty. Or maybe they say
The
something to
cycle.
themselves like, well, I've already blown it. I might as well eat the rest and it'll be gone and I won't have to face it tomorrow when I go back on my diet. What happened for you instead, because of your mindfulness approach to it, is, oh, wait, look what's happening here. I see. This is an old program that has been reactivated by this stress that I'm under or this emotional trigger. That is an exact example of how mindfulness can help. A change a person's relationship with food to something that really becomes inside out. They become the expert on meeting their own needs, both nutritionally as well as emotionally.
And I love that because then there's no guilt attached to it. I didn't walk away feeling guilty. I walked away feeling empowered because I realized what was behind my actions and I was able to stop it. What are
That's right.
some other strategies that you could share with us that would really bring the awareness to our listeners?
Well, I want to go back to one thing that you just said that's really, I think, important. And that is when a craving doesn't come from hunger, eating really can't satisfy it. So, one of the clues that you're eating emotionally or that you're not eating to meet your own needs is that you don't feel satiated. You just feel like you want to keep eating. And so, that's oftentimes a sign that there's something else going on. So now back to the tips that I
You're
would
filling a
start
void,
with.
right? You're trying to fill a void.
You're trying to fill a void. And of course, food meets our needs for nutrition, for fuel and energy, and some pleasure, but it can't meet all those other needs very well. And so we will continue to eat and eat and eat, and then pile more emotion on it when we feel guilty for doing it. And so this is the cycle. I call it the eat, repent, repeat cycle that people get into, and they're missing the driver of the cycle. So a really great place to start. It sounds overly simplistic, but it's such an important point of awareness, is whenever you feel like eating, pause for just a moment and check in. What is happening right now? And so check your physical sensations. Am I physically hungry right now? Is my stomach growling? Is my energy low? What's happening here fuel-wise? What thoughts am I having? Am I thinking, oh, I won't get another chance to eat, or ooh, that looks good, or I better get my share, or whatever the thought might be. And then what emotions are you feel experiencing or feeling at that time? Stress, sadness, boredom, enjoyment, pleasure, what is going on? And once you have that picture, then you can make a decision. All right, so I want to eat. Am I going to eat? Now, even if you're not hungry, you can still choose to eat. It's part of normal eating to sometimes eat for pleasure or distraction or convenience. What happens though for most people is they realize that they're much more satisfied with food when they're actually hungry. My grandmother used to say, hunger is the best seasoning, and less satisfied with food when there is something else going on. And so one of the things we work on then is, well, if you're not hungry, what might be happening and what are we going to do about that?
And that makes so much sense. I love that saying that your grandmother said. That's brilliant, actually.
Yeah, it really is an important differentiator, because I think one of the things that's happening in diet culture is we're making food the enemy. And food is not our enemy. Food is something that should be enjoyable, should be nourishing, and helps us connect with other people, with our culture, with our environment. It's something that should be able to be enjoyed without piling on guilt. However, when people are using food in place of meeting their other needs, then the enjoyment, the pleasure that's available from eating, the connection actually disappears. People will often eat secretly or shamefully, and that does not bring enjoyment and nourishment to us.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Cindy Bigelow of Bigelow Tea, and I'm here to introduce you to our newest line called Bigelow Benefits. I love them all. We have stress-free, and I say, who doesn't want to be stress-free? Stay well, perfect for this time of year. Calm stomach, sleep, another important one, and our newest, throat defense. So try any one of them. You can buy them on Amazon or BigelowTea.com. I guarantee you, you will love them all.
Definitely not. I think, and that's an important point, because making food the enemy, it puts it as it's exactly like you're constantly in a battle, right? If you think about it, then it becomes a battle with what you're
Yes.
eating, as opposed to eating to nourish your body. So there are things that we want to stay away from because they don't nourish us. And, you know, it's an interesting way to put it, you know. So in terms of like, how do we look at our food? How do we look at what we're putting in our body, especially in this stage? Because you know, our audience are women in perimenopause and menopause. So for many of us, a lot of these old emotions start coming back. If our kids are, you know, what if we had children and their kids are moving out of the house, or perhaps we're not working as much, or, you know, whatever it is that's happening in our lives. So a lot of these emotions start to come up for us. So we may be triggered in certain ways that we had not even thought of in, you know, maybe 10, 15 years. I like the idea of mindful eating in the sense that we're putting, it's like mental, physical, emotional, everything is kind of coming together to look at what we're doing, whether, you know, it's our lifestyle or whether it comes to the food that we're putting in our mouth.
Well, and I think the other real amazing part about bringing awareness or bringing intention and attention to your eating is that it really gives you the opportunity to take better care of yourself. So, one of the themes in my work is that our body is constantly giving us information to help us care for it. And unfortunately, for many women who for their many much of their lives were busy with their careers, maybe their families, maybe whatever it was that was driving them, now things start to slow down and there may feel like there's some holes there, and we might be tempted to fill those holes with food, which doesn't work very well very long. It works temporarily, which is why we do it. We're not crazy. I mean, we do it because it works, but it doesn't work for very long. And so when people relearn to listen to the information that their body is giving them, they can begin to take better care. So, for example, when you're tired, you rest or sleep. When you're thirsty, you drink. When you're angry, you have a difficult conversation. You soothe yourself in some way. So when we're using food for all those reasons, it's a very limited option. So beginning to tune in and notice these symptoms, not as something to be avoided or, pushed down with food, alcohol, even exercise or other strategies, but to really say, oh, this is uncomfortable. What is my body trying to tell me I'm needing right now? And even our emotions are information that we can learn to interpret and then take action to practice some form of self-care.
So what type of action can we take when we, so maybe we don't realize that we're eating, mindlessly or eating things that, or eating for reasons other than hunger. How could we become aware of that to be able to eat mindfully?
Right. Well, so the first step, again, a moment ago I said pause and check in and look for symptoms of hunger. The metaphor I like for this is that if you were driving down the freeway and you saw a gas station, you wouldn't just pull off at the next exit and fill up without first checking your fuel gauge. And so that's what we're doing when we pause to check in, is we're checking our fuel gauge. Is this food I'm needing now when I want to eat, or is it something else? Is it boredom? And so that opportunity and looking for physical symptoms of hunger helps us decide which decision we're going to make next. Let's say that you're not hungry. As I mentioned, you could still eat if you want to. It's nothing to feel guilty about. It's just not as satisfying, and most people find they do it less and less as we work together. If you decide, I'm really not hungry and I'm going to eat lunch in a little while or dinner in a little while, I want to find something else to do until I get hungry. That's redirecting my attention until my body tells me I need food or until I decide to eat. So that might mean playing a game on your phone. It might mean texting a friend. It might mean starting dinner. It might mean any number of things for you. And then the final option might be to say, okay, why am I wanting to eat right now? What's driving this desire? Now, rather than redirecting our attention, we go toward the discomfort and get curious about it. The top two triggers for eating when I ask people this question are boredom and stress. Now, boredom, of course, is solved by doing something, and eating is something to do, but of course, the minute you stop eating, you're bored again, and so you have to eat again. So, finding something to do that's enjoyable, that's pleasurable, maybe something that needs to be done, but isn't, repulsive, like, doing your taxes or cleaning a toilet, but something that you might actually choose over food is a great way to cure boredom. Stress is a big umbrella, and in our culture, we often use the word stress, but underneath stress, there's many, many, many different causes. Too much to do, not feeling capable, not, maybe needing help, etc. And so there's a lot of exploration that can occur there. And then by discovering what that source of stress is, then you have a better chance of taking care of it in an effective way. I like to start with a couple of deep breaths because the nervous system responds really well to pausing and taking a few breaths. The nervous system just knows that if you're breathing like that, it must be okay, versus holding your breath or rapidly breathing. So that those deep breaths are a great place to start and then move forward.
I love that we say to calm the nervous system before you eat, because when you're stressed and you eat, it releases cortisol, and cortisol actually disrupts our digestions. We now know our vagus nerve, when our brain is unhappy, our gut is unhappy, and vice versa, right? So I
That's
think that's a
great.
great tip. I love that. And are there any other tips that you want to share with us before we end the interview? Like anything that you think that would be very helpful to the women who are people who are listening to the podcast?
Well, it's not directly related to eating, but one of the common themes that shows up in people that I work with is they use exercise as punishment for eating, or to pay penance for eating something they perceive as bad, or to even earn the right to eat. And so when I was in my medical practice, I often heard patients say, "Well, Dr. May, I know I should exercise, but I hate it." And of course, if you're using it in a punitive manner, you're not going to enjoy it. So I would encourage all of us to find movement that we really enjoy. Start where you are, start small. I say lower the bar, make it as simple as possible. Too often people hear advice about how much they should be exercising, and it's so far from where they are, they just don't even know where to start. So start small. Go slow and add to it with enjoyment. If you're finding things that bring joy to your body and help you in your movement, it's not about burning calories, but again, it's about nurturing our nervous system. It's about using our bodies in ways that was intended and really helps us reconnect with our physical sensations. So it's not directly eating, but stop using exercise as the antidote to eating and use movement as a way of nurturing yourself.
I actually re I'm so happy you said that, because I have a good friend who she does love to exercise, but she always says she exercises so that she can eat, because she loves to eat too. So I'm happy that you said that, because it shouldn't be a punitive thing. It should be because it's beneficial for us, right? So eating is beneficial for us. Exercising is beneficial for us. But yeah, I like how you frame that.
Yeah, they don't, it's not a math equation that we should be using to calculate calories in and calories out. It's really independently eating and physical activity are both really, really, really good for us on a physical, emotional, and neurological level. So let's use it for the benefits that we receive from it.
I like that. Lots of food for thought, right? Haha. So I know that I said in the intro that you've worked with over 800 clinicians. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do? And I know I talked about your book, so tell us how people can find you and how you can help our listeners.
Yeah, so when I finally resolved my own issues with food, I developed mindful eating programs for yo-yo dieting, diabetes, people who've had bariatric surgery and continue to struggle, binge eating. I also teach a class at Arizona State University, as you mentioned. And so I teach other health and wellness professionals to offer those programs for their patients and clients too. So, health and wellness professionals who are looking for a different way of approaching this whole eating thing that is more effective and more in line with what we now know is a sustainable approach.
Michelle, who would be your ideal customer or client?
The people I can help the most are people who have been struggling a really long time in their relationship with food. They've tried every diet. They've been dieting or trying program after program for decades, or maybe they've even given up and they feel like they're a failure. They haven't been able to stick to anything long term. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, diets themselves, as you know, are not sustainable. And so I teach them that their number one priority is to heal their relationship with food. Until they have a healthy relationship with food, it's very hard for them to take in new in nutrition information without turning it into another restrictive eating plan. And so once they get a healthy relationship with food, then they're able to make decisions about their diet, about their nutrition that supports how they want to feel. And so really the shift is from being good to feeling good.
Thank you so much for doing this, Michelle. It was very interesting, and I appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Dr. Michelle May. If you did, you know what to do. Please share it because the more you share, it shows you care. And please leave a review for Menopause Reimagined because I love to read what you have to say about this podcast. Also, I'm very open to suggestions. So if you have any suggestions, please feel free to email us at info@wearemorphous.com, MORPHUS.com. And I will definitely look for some experts that can talk to those topics that you'd like to hear me talk about. I appreciate you spending the last hour and a bit with me. As always, I know there's a lot you can be doing, but you chose to spend it with me, and I'm grateful. I'll see you at the next podcast.